Thank you, Massimo, for coming to PI virtually for our weekly seminar. And we're happy to have him talk about celestial correlators from AADS to AADS EMAC.
Thank you very much, Sabrina, for the invitation. It's always a pleasure to be back at PI, also if if this time is virtual, but I guess it's much more easier, right? It's much more easy. So in this talk, I will talk about some celestial holography in connection to anti de Sitter space, and basically what I will mention will be based on some paper that we wrote recently with Charlotte and a student Lorenzo Iacobacci at the University of Naples. So this is the paper. Basically this is If you consider it as the last step of some ongoing effort, which we have been taking with Charlotte to kind of extend as much as we can the techniques that we have learned and to use in the context of anti-de Sitter CFT correspondence. Okay, and in particular, it can be useful to also mention these initial papers, which didn't help with the celestial holography directly, but will turn out very useful to understand the results that I will present. In particular, there is this initial paper where we tried to first generalize and use the AADS-CFT techniques in the context of the de Sitter physics and inflation. And then there are a bunch of other papers where we obtained some other results in these directions. And all the results of this paper will kind of be a key to understand also what I will present today. I will kind of review a little bit briefly also this the main results of these other papers. Of course, feel free to interrupt me and ask as many questions as you want. So I hope it would be a nice discussion. Very good. So the plan of the talk will start with some introduction. And I will basically explain our main motivation for doing this series of work. Then I will review like the simplest example in which you can import techniques and technology from anti-de Sitter to the de Sitter space. So I will first very briefly give some idea in the context of what I would say from the de Sitter to anti-de Sitter. And then I will discuss the main topic of this recent paper, which is celestial to anti-de Sitter. And then I will end with some conclusions and outlook. Okay, so this is more or less the plan. So focusing for now on the introduction, basically the main motivation is kind of in the context of what I would call the bootstrap approach, bootstrap philosophy, if you want. So what is the main philosophy of the bootstrap? The main philosophy of the bootstrap is to constrain observables. That's the object. So you just focus on some observable you want to constrain. Observables. And what do you want to use in order to do that? You want to use two things. First thing is symmetry, very important. Symmetry. And then you just want to add to that consistency. So consistency is a very big word. So I would put here some kind of a question mark, because this is kind of part of the question that we would like to understand, especially when we go away from anti-de Sitter space, where everything is kind of more or less clear nowadays after so many years. And indeed, let me go to our best kind of toy model or toy example that we've got of this type of bootstrap approach, which is exactly anti-de Sitter CFT. So anti-de Sitter space is a cylinder. So what this philosophy is telling us is that we can actually constrain kind of scattering observables in anti-de Sitter. Let me draw one. So we have some, something on the boundary here. We send something in anti-de Sitter. We have some interactions, and then we obtain something coming out. And this scattering observables in anti-de Sitter is computed by some CFT correlators. Okay, so the nice thing of anti-de Sitter CFT correspondence is that we know what is symmetry and what is consistency very clearly, and also at the non-perturbative level. So symmetry is conformal symmetry. Conformal symmetry. And the non-perturbative conditions, once you map your observable to a CFT calculation, is basically you obtain for free, is basically transformed. You can say that this consistency is the consistency of your OPE, okay? Plus unitarity. Okay, and basically in formulas, what did I do? I think I so the tablet just, yeah. The connection, I'm not sharing the screen anymore.
Right now it's not, but.
Yeah, let me, something happened. And okay, let me share again. Et voilà, sorry for that. So yeah, here it is. Okay. And what I was saying is that the OPE is a kind of very simple thing. It's basically expanding this CFT correlator in terms of an expansion operator. So dimension, delta, quantum numbers of the conformal group with some positive coefficient in the simplest cases. And these are some objects, the conformal blocks, which are entirely fixed by symmetry. Okay, so this is a very powerful picture, which gives us some, powerful way to understand observables. In the case of anti-de Sitter, also gravitational, in particular gravitational observables, from a bootstrap perspective. And so, a natural question, which will be is at the center of the motivation of this talk, is what can we import? What can we generalize about this picture? What can we generalize? And in particular, can we go beyond the case of anti-de Sitter space, which from the perspective, purely phenomenological perspective, is not really the best place we would like to be. So what we would like to really understand is de Sitter, which is our universe, and Minkowski, it's the experiment in CERN, if you want. So it seems kind of strange. We know very well what to do in a kind of unphysical case, but still it's a very good motivation to try to see what can be done going beyond the Sitter. So just as a little note here, I will not explicitly introduce, in doing this extension, it will turn out to be a little bit more difficult to talk about gravity when trying to extend anti-de Sitter to de Sitter on Minkowski. So we should just consider in the context of this talk, just for simplicity, the case of just QFT. So I will think of QFT in anti-de Sitter, and I will try to extend these technologies to QFT in de Sitter and QFT in Minkowski. And then, we can discuss about questions of how to extend this QFT picture to the case of gravity, okay? So let me now try to see what are the similarities and differences between all these spaces. So, and let me draw some some kind of table which can summarize various things about these spaces. In particular, I will write on the first column anti-de Sitter space, which is a space where everything is nice and clear. And I will write on this column like the isometry of the space. Then I will write some information about the conformal boundary, which is very important information to understand. If we have an holographic picture in mind. And then I will write down the constraints, which I would refer to like unitarity and causality, or more generally quantum consistency, if you want. Okay, so here I will put anti-de Sitter, and then I will also talk about de Sitter d plus one, and I will put on the same line Minkowski space at d plus two, and this will be clear in a moment why I choose the dimension in this way. Okay, so the isometry of anti-de Sitter, you all know, is SOD comma two. is the conformal group. This makes, I mean, this is a central observation also in the context of a holographic case. The conformal boundary, which is also important for the understanding of consistency, is a Minkowski space D. So you have time at the boundary to understand quantum mechanics at the boundary. And the unitarity and causality is basically analytic continuity, I mean, it's basically the consistency of Lorentzian CFT. Okay. Of course, and this would be an important step. Usually technology, so when you work on anti-de Sitter, and also in the very initial formulation of anti-de Sitter CFT correspondence, usually you don't really work directly with the Lorentzian anti-de Sitter. It's actually convenient to introduce Euclidean anti-de Sitter space, a little bit like a standard weak rotation where you consider theory on Euclidean space, okay? So when one does that, the isometry becomes so d plus 1 comma 1. Our boundary, you know, there is the standard picture of going from a Lorentzian QFT to a Euclidean QFT, so it lives on Rb. And what we get for unitarity and causality is just the, you know, what follows from the Osterwalder, I mean, from the theorem, the reconstruction theorem that allows, that defines this analytic continuation to Euclidean. And why I mentioned this? Okay, the important thing of Euclidean anti-de-Sitter space is that it's a key, I mean, all the tools that we know and love in anti-de Sitter CFT, like conformal partial wave expansion, and the calculation of many things like inversion formula and so on, they can actually be formulated in terms of this harmonic analysis on this space. And then, of course, many results have been obtained by understanding how this is related to the standard Lorentzian picture and so on. But the important thing of this isometry here is that this is the same isometry group of the Sitter space. So there is a way to try to connect the technology that we can use and learned how to use in the context of Euclidean anti-Sitter space in the Sitter space, because they share this isometry group. They also share the conformal boundary. It's not a manifold with time. And let me just draw very briefly the Penrose diagram. So the boundary of the Sitter space is the future boundary. Here is some conformal time that you put equal zero, and this is where the boundary lives. So it's a little bit of a different picture with respect to anti-de Sitter, but is the picture that we can that we have. Okay. And of course, question is, we don't know much about unitarity and causality, about the quantum consistency from this perspective in the context of the Sitter. I will mention some recent results about this, which are very promising, but they're still very complicated to have a full understanding at the non-perturbative level of what would be unitarity and causality here. And now let me go to Minkowski D plus two. So in Minkowski space, the symmetry, the isometries is really E. Let me put in parentheses because we have translation. And then we have the Lorentz symmetry. So again, there is some part of these isometries that is shared. You see there is Euclidean anti-de Sitter, de Sitter, and Minkowski space have some part of the isometry which is the same. And this also translates into some similarity of the boundary. The boundary is like, in the case of Minkowski, some SD times R. And you know, everyone knows the standard Penrose diagram of Minkowski space. And we can see that the fact that there is some part of this isometry that is the same is basically equivalent to kind of to say that this SD is basically this RD, conformally they are the same space. And this is what usually one calls the celestial sphere. Okay. And okay, for so from the perspective of the symmetry and conformal boundary, things are quite clear. But from the perspective of consistency, again, I would put some big question mark. It's not completely obvious to say what are the analog of the things that we understand very well in the context of anti-de Sitter space in the context of Minkowski. Okay, this is some initial picture which tries to put all these different spaces on similar footing. And there is actually another way which makes things a little bit even more clear than that. Okay, and this is the so-called ambient space picture. So the nice thing of the ambient space picture is that it breaks this isometry, it breaks the translation part. So that really makes manifest the fact that both Euclidean anti-de-Sitter, the Sitter and Minkowski, at least part of it, is really the same isometry. So there is some common symmetry part of all of these spaces, which will be the key for us to try to map calculation in different spaces together. So, and what is this ambient space picture? It's actually a very old picture. I mean, it was used even by Dirac more recently. It's a very standard picture, but it's very useful to be mentioned because one can embed Euclidean anti-de-Sitter and the Sitter space in some Minkowski space. So let's start from some Minkowski D plus two. And We have a picture here, some light cone, so we have fixed some origin. So this has broken translations in Minkowski. And now we can draw Euclidean anti-de-Sitter space. Is the two-sheeted hyperboloid. Okay. And then there is the Lorentzian de-Sitter space, which is the one-sheeted hyperboloid. Okay. So the radius, so here we can parameterize. So I will call T the radius of the anti-de-Sitter space, and the radius of anti-de-Sitter space can be both positive or negative to distinguish the two branches of the two-sheeted hyperboloid. And then I will call R the radius of the de-Sitter. So this is Euclidean anti-de-Sitter space, D plus one, and this is the Sitter D plus one. So this picture, what does it do? And then here is the light cone. Okay. So what does this picture do? It makes basically the table that I draw below before manifest. Okay. We can choose nicely Poincaré coordinates. So all of this space can be covered in four patches, which are A plus, A minus. A plus and A minus are anti-de-Sitter with T positive and anti-de-Sitter with T negative. And then we have D plus and D minus, which are the two Poincaré charts of the Sitter space. Okay, just to be clear, I will write down how it is parameterized in terms of the standard Poincaré coordinate, which is very simple. So here you have 1 plus z squared plus x squared divided by 2, and then 1 minus z squared minus x squared divided by 2, and then x. Here it will be the same, but so t here is positive and z is positive. So here is exactly the same, but T is negative, and that is positive. Or instead, for D plus, we have R, and here I put minus eta. Eta is this conformal time, which is usually used in the Sitter space, and is minus eta squared plus x squared divided by 2, and then 1 plus eta squared minus x squared divided by 2, x on xr. And here we have that eta in D plus is negative, and of course R is always positive, the radius of the Sitter is always positive. And what changes here is simply the sign. Here we have ER over eta, and then we have 1 minus eta squared plus x squared over 2, 1 plus eta squared minus x squared over 2, x on I, and here of course eta is greater than 0, and R remains greater than 0. Okay, so we can see now that anti-de-Sitter and de-Sitter are embedded in Minkowski, and the standard holographic picture tells us that the boundary, the conformal boundary of A plus A minus is exactly this light cone, C plus and C minus, and it is the shared conformal boundary of D plus and D minus, and precisely corresponds to one point on the conformal boundary on Minkowski space, which is what we call celestial sphere. Okay, this is a very simple picture. It has been known for some time and puts kind of these all of these spaces on the same footing. Okay. So what we want to do in this picture is to push this picture. So we know that A plus and A minus physics is well understood, is exactly the physics we all learned how to deal with and how to compute from Andy de Sitter CFT correspondence. And we want to try to connect, we're using this picture, it's defining some analytic continuation, the physics of A plus and A minus to the physics of D plus and D minus, and then see together the physics in Minkowski space as a kind of combination of the physics in A plus, A minus, D plus and D minus. So if we understand physics in A plus and A minus, in D plus and D minus, then we combine everything, and Minkowski physics can be finally decomposed in terms of all of these patches, okay? So the first thing, and that's the second part of my seminar, is to discuss the case of D plus. The case of this of D plus is the simplest case to understand, and it's also clear that once we understand D plus, we can also, with a little bit more work, and I will mention it later, understand Minkowski. But let's focus for simplicity on D plus. And D plus is also quite relevant from a phenomenological perspective, because this this is the chart of the De Sitter space in the Hart-Locking state. You know, so it's precisely what we are would be interested to look at in the context of inflation. Okay, inflation considered as some kind of slightly broken De Sitter phase. I mean, you can approximate in this. I will not go much into the details of this, but we can discuss, of course, of inflation. So this is very relevant for that. And let me draw some Penrose diagram here. Let me change color. So we have this type of Penrose diagram. Okay. So at the future and the past, we have the two boundaries. These are the C plus and C minus. Basically, here we have a formal time, eta. And it's quite useful, actually, to think. So these are the two patches. This is D plus that we are trying to understand. And this also, I mean, comes for free is the other patch, which is D minus. And it's useful to and interesting to understand this in relation to what we actually are interested to do in the context of inflation. In the context of inflation, we are interested into fixed time correlators. So we need to use, because the De Sitter is a Hamiltonian, the De Sitter space is time dependent. We need to use some kind of in formalism in order to evaluate correlators. And this is equivalent to kind of continue this time eta time. So here we have eta equals zero. Here we have eta lower than zero, and here we will have eta greater than zero. And basically, if you want, these two time part of the time contour will be the time order and anti-time order contour. And one can see this part of the time, this anti-time order contour is kind of will be related to the physics in the minus. Okay. So and what one does at this point? One has to try to simply understand. So what we try to do, we try to understand the physics in these two spaces as some analytic continuation of the physics in A plus and A minus. Okay, in particular, what we focused, we take this space, we have eta here, we have eta equals zero at the center. And then we can compute, like, for instance, two-point functions. There are two-point functions which are anti-time order, two-point functions which are time order, which live on them, and two-point functions which can connect points in different of these, I mean, they connect points that are on different parts of this time contour, okay? What turns out is that to understand the analytic continuation is not at all very difficult, and there is another picture that I can show you to understand this analytic continuation. It's simply that here we take, for instance, the eta, some eta complex space. So we try to understand this analytic continuation in terms of eta. You can already see what's going on. Z should go to plus or minus I eta. And the way to understand it is that, of course, there are these two different branches. There is a branch cut right here. Okay. And it goes up to infinity. And there are the two possible evolution operator. There is the time ordered one, which is e to the minus I, e to the minus infinity to eta and minus infinity, it has to be regularized in order not to touch the branch cut. So it will be something like this. So this regularization here is an high epsilon prescription, which goes here. And this is our Hamiltonian. Okay. And what we do is simply to open up this contour going here. So when one does that, following this I epsilon prescription, one defines some z coordinate, which is minus eta e to the I pi over 2 minus epsilon. Okay? And similar things you do for the anti-time ordered evolution operator. And what happens is that the time contour becomes some contour here in this complexified eta coordinate, which we call z. So here we obtain.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
How do you know that you can drop the arc at infinity? Do we know it's
you have to check. You have to check.
You check with the explicit.
We check in the context at the perturbative level. And all of this calculation we have done and we have shown at the perturbative level. So we have checked that for the propagator, you can actually drop this arc at infinity, and the two-point function, you can drop the arc at infinity. For any contact term, you can drop the argument at infinity, and so on.
Okay. It's not guaranteed when, I mean, that at fixed coupling, you can do this, right?
Say again?
It's not guaranteed that when you sum up all the, I mean, when you fix, when the coupling is not small, that you can do this? Or is there some argument?
What we showed is that at any order, I mean, at any order in perturbation theory, you can do this. And of course, when you try to resum this perturbative expansion, in some example, you can, in principle, resum it. But so the point is the following. So we evaluate each diagram using this analytic continuation. Then we get the result. This result is the same as you didn't do the analytic continuation. Then you resum. I mean, you don't lose anything. You can resum. But of course, you don't know what happens non-perturbatively. So there can be non-perturbative contribution, which may spoil this. But the claim is that diagram by a diagram, this analytic continuation works.
How do they decay at infinity? Is it like a polynomial? How does it decay?
Yeah, it's something that depends on the dimension. It's some eta to the dimension at the denominator.
For each order, the decay is faster, or is how does it go?
Yeah. There is the number of legs appears, so it's d over 2 plus n, 1 over eta to d over 2 plus n, something like that.
Okay.
And so this is the statement. Okay, does it make sense? Good. So this is kind of from the perspective of this talk, this kind of warm up. Okay, but once we understand that this analytic continuation works for all of our Feynman rules and it allows us to evaluate our perturbative diagrams, what we can do is to really it's exactly what I just said, and I think I will just summarize the final formula, which is a nice diagrammatic formula. So we have some diagrams, perturbative diagram, whatever. I put 4 points here, but it's not necessary. So all of these 4-point diagrams. So, and this is something important that I will discuss now. So the statement is that without skipping the details is that using this analytic continuation, we evaluate this diagram and we obtain that this is basically a sum over the possible boundary condition, Dirichlet-Neumann, because we know that in Euclidean anti-de Sitter, we have these two. So we can, every de Sitter perturbative diagram becomes a sum of coefficients, which depend on this Dirichlet and Neumann, some coefficients, and the corresponding diagram in Euclidean anti-de Sitter space. Okay, so that's what the analytic continuation gives us. So notice that this analytic continuation is not a big rotation, because we go from one theory with one Lagrangian, so one set of fields, to a theory with double set of fields, because we have to sum over the Dirichlet norm. So it's an analytic continuation that relates different Lagrangian in different spaces. And in this very precise way, I know how to compute the observable, the perturbative observable in the sitter, knowing which linear combination of observables in Euclidean anti-sitter to evaluate. So something very complicated in the sitter is just a sum of very complicated objects in Euclidean anti-sitter, which, however, we have been used to, you know, work with for in the years so far. Okay. So, and remember this, in particular, this sum, because kind of this picture will then generalize to also to Minkowski. Just there will be here some difference just in this sum. Just to give some example, of course, we can consider contact terms. Okay. And in the case of contact terms, I mean, this, the structure is the same. This C becomes some sine function, very simple. The sum over all the external dimensions minus D times the corresponding, you know, contact, the D function in anti-Lesitter. And the other simple example, but of course, this is also for any perturbative diagram, is the exchange, which is also nice because to make you understand what is the structure of this map. Okay, so the exchange in the sitter is just a sum over, you know, these are, you should consider this C as some kind of OP, quote unquote. They are not really, but let me, some, you know, some, there is some factorization here entering in this identity. That's why I mentioned that. And so you have the corresponding exchange with the delta plus operator, and then the corresponding coefficients, 1, 2, delta minus, C, 3, 4, delta minus, with the corresponding exchange and delta minus. Okay? So that's what I mean by this sum here. Okay? I mean that you just decompose the diagrams, and factorization will basically tell you this C is just the 3-point C, the contact C with 3 points. So if I look at this C here, exactly that C that I evaluated 3 point will appear in the formula for the exchange at 4 point and so on. Okay. So this is a very powerful statement. Yes, it's not non-perturbative. This is its limitation, but it's still very powerful. At any order in perturbation theory, there is the same analytic structure of the de Sitter observables and the anti-de Sitter observables. Okay. So this seems to suggest that there is some way to define OP also for this non-unitary CFT, because when you do this analytic continuation, you get operators with complex dimensions. They are not unitary from the perspective of Osterwald and Schrader, but they will be unitary from a different perspective, which is the one that from the bulk is the, you know, the one we are interested in. Okay, so this is the picture when we focused in D plus. Okay, is there any question here? Because now I want to move to the Minkowski picture. I want to extend this picture to the full Minkowski space by combining all of these different patches. So what do we do in Minkowski? So in this iter, we had the mode functions. This could be nicely studied and so on. Basically, we understood very well what is the bulk to boundary propagator. In Minkowski, we need to understand what is the analog of the bulk to boundary propagator. And what we did in our paper with the student in the University of Naples was to think of the bulk to boundary propagator. So this is Minkowski now. So the bulk to boundary propagator that we took. That we took is the conformal mode that was introduced by Sabrina, Shuang, Shao, and Strominger a few years ago. So we want to think of these conformal modes as our bulk to boundary propagator. So let me review the definition. So of course, we start now having like more than one bulk to boundary propagator, because we can consider ingoing and outgoing. So we have two boundaries in the picture, in the ambient space picture. There is the light cone in the negative C minus, and there is C plus. And then the structure of these conformal modes. So they depend on one point in the bulk of Minkowski, and then on some point that can be on this boundary. is basically some momentum integral, and the momentum integral is a kind of hyperbolic integral, because p squared is equal minus one, is p squared is equal minus m squared, so this can be written as some hyperbolic integral. And then we have some bulk to boundary propagator, p dot q plus minus to the power of delta, and then a plane wave. Okay. So this object here is what we want to consider as our bulk to boundary propagator. And then we want to just extend the calculation that we did in the sitter, but this time we want to compute things like integrals over x of various bulk to boundary propagator, which is exactly the same type of integral that also Sabrina and Xuan computed, for instance, okay? But we want to follow a different approach in order to evaluate these perturbative diagrams, which is similar to what I've shown in the sitter, okay? So let me go back to this conformal mode. Let me say a couple of things about it, okay? Of course, this integral has a very special feature, is not very well defined, right? So it's not very well defined for arbitrary x. It should be defined by some analytic continuation. Okay, this is the first observation. That's one difficulty more than in the case of the C. But however, you can perform the integral using this trick of analytic continuation. What you end up with is basically this is exactly proportional to the bulk to boundary propagator. Okay, this is Q plus minus up to some Bessel function. Okay, this was already done by Sabrina and Schwenk, for instance. And then the dependence on this of this bulk to boundary propagator is basically where the mass of the field in Minkowski space enters. There is either the mass times the radius. This is when I consider the analytic continuation in the de Sitter, so the plus and the minus, or I get the dependence on this t. Remember the radius of the anti de Sitter space embedded in the Minkowski. Okay, so there is this Bessel function, which can depend on m times r or plus or minus I m t. And the nice thing, and usually you don't study the bulk to boundary propagator in momentum space because things become more messy in momentum space when you Fourier transform the CFT correlator. But if you do Fourier transform this bulk to boundary propagator, you basically get that this conformal mode is nothing but a product of two Bessel functions with basically same parameter. So here I have a Bessel function of delta minus d over 2, which can be of kz. K is the momentum. Okay, I'm Fourier transforming on the boundary on the light cone. Z is the Poincaré coordinate, so x I'm decomposing. And if I am in a plus and a minus, I get kz. Let me write it like this. Or plus or minus I eta k, okay? And the product of k delta minus d over 2, mr, or plus or minus e mt. Okay, it's basically the same Bessel function with the same argument, but for the z Poincaré direction is kz, the combination of plus or minus eta k, and for the radial, or T, this AES radius, is similar pattern. So we have some analytic continuation of this Bessel function, okay? So it's factorized, and so this gives us some hope to be able to use techniques that we developed in the sitter, because in the sitter we learn basically how to deal with these Bessel functions, and we want to compute what I wrote before. Let me write it more explicitly. This perturbative diagram. So the simplest, let's be simple, but it can be done also for more general perturbative diagram. Let's compute some contact diagram. So integral now on Minkowski space, and we want to consider the product of various Minkowski, quote unquote, bulk to boundary propagators with boundary point Q1, and then phi n plus or minus x Qn, okay? So it's not a surprise, but the fact that, so these are the same analytic continuation that we defined in the case of the sitter. So it's not a surprise that this integral, when you perform this analytic continuation, the same result that hold in the sitter generalized here. You can also study this integral, the radial integral. You see that also that integral is convergent and you can drop the arc at infinity. And what you get is that this is a coefficient, which depends, of course, on the plus minus if the leg, the bar to boundary propagator is in or out, the various legs. And here you get the anti de Sitter function, Euclidean anti de Sitter function. Okay. So the nice thing that allows us to compute this is the completely factorized form in R and Z of the conformal mode. So this C coefficient is basically now the radial integral. So in the case of the sitter, there was no integral, there was just some linear combination after the analytic continuation. Here there is the linear combination plus some linear combination of a plus, a minus, d plus, and e minus, plus a radial integral that is completely factorized. So this encodes the radial integral. Okay. So this is a very general result. So we have a closed form expression in terms of a Mellin representation for these coefficients. Okay, and we can evaluate them not only at the level of contact terms, but also more generally. And also it's worth mentioning that, so this integral have been, Sabrina and collaborate also tried to evaluate these integrals. They had a different approach, which actually underlines some connection of these calculations rather than with the CFT correlators directly with S matrix amplitudes. So the idea is that basically this integral can be rewritten as some Minkowski integral of a bunch of momentum integrals on the hyperbolic space, right? A bunch of momentum integral in the hyperbolic space of all of these mode functions. So you have QI dot P, PI to the delta I, let's say, and I have product or a bunch of products, and then the various plane wave contributions. So I am M1, X dot P1 plus all the other terms. And if we now commute this integral, you get some delta function, and this is nothing but in the case of the contact terms, this is just an example. It's nothing but the delta function that appears in the S matrix amplitude for the corresponding contact term. Okay. However, so this is a nice connection, so you can actually show that this complicated integral can be obtained by, you know, doing some transform, some special transform to the S matrix. But when you do that, it's not very easy to evaluate the integral, especially in the massive case. So there have been examples worked out, but in very special cases and limiting cases. And also, when you evaluate the integral in that way, it's not manifestly a conformal invariant. Okay, you don't manifestly get this function here, which is the D function, which is manifestly conformal invariant thanks to this factorization of the radial and the Z dependence. And then there is also, in my opinion, a subtlety, because these integrals are not convergent. So one should justify the commutation of this Minkowski integral with these non-convergent integrals, okay? So, our approach was to basically instead take the Minkowski integral and just split it as integral over a plus, integral over a minus, integral over d plus, and integral over d minus. Okay, so we solve the problem of the divergent integral because we know exactly which analytic, which I epsilon prescription we should put in the mode function. And then we perform the integral. So we get two type of integrals. So let me just discuss a bit the type of integrals that we get. So there are the radial integrals. There are two radial integrals. There is the radial integral that comes from the Hunting de Sitter contribution. This radial integral has this structure. So it's a radial integral, so from zero to infinity on this t variable. T is the radius of Hunting de Sitter space to the power d plus one. And then there are a bunch of Bessel functions. And this Bessel function can have argument that is plus or minus I m 1 t and so on. Plus or minus I m n t. So this type of integral is what comes from the Hunting de Sitter part. And then there is the radial integral that instead comes from the de Sitter part, which is a little bit different. It's a little bit different because in the de Sitter part, there is no this plus I continuation, which makes the Bessel K an Hankel function. So you just get the integral from zero to infinity dr, r to the d plus one, and k delta one minus d over two, and here you get m1 r, and so on, okay? So why I'm mentioning this difference? Because these type of integrals are exactly the type of integrals that enter when we evaluate in momentum space some CFD correlator. And indeed, let me relate this integral to the actual eta and z Poincaré integral. So the Poincaré integral is like this. It, from zero to infinity in the case of the sitter is eta to the eta d plus one. This is a standard Poincaré measure in the Poincaré patch. And then we have a bunch of Bessel functions calculated at k1 eta and k delta n minus d over two kn eta. Okay, so it's very similar type of integral to the actual CFT correlator. So the dependence on K and the dependence on M enters via the same type of function. And here instead is the integral in Hunting de Sitter space. Here you have K delta one minus D over two, and then K one Z, and so on, another bunch of Bessel functions. Okay. So why I'm mentioning this a little bit technical thing, because I want to tell you what is the difference between these two radial integrals. And actually it's very physical. So the fact that here you have this plus and minus I m p is exactly the analog of the so-called folded singularities in CFT. So folded singularities is a singularity in a CFT correlator, which appears when the moment are conserved, k1 plus k2 plus k3 is zero. Sometime, and this happens in the alpha vacuum, but here I'm not talking about, you see, M1 is the mass, so this singularity is not appearing in the momenta. So you should not, but you should, just to understand the structure of, the analytic structure of this integral, is exactly the same that you get a singularity when it's collinear, I mean, the sum of the momentum is, I mean, they are collinear, this collapse is called collapse triangle singularity. So an example of this singularity here is, for instance, like 1 over square root of m1, m2, m3. And then we have, for instance, m3 minus m1 minus m2 to the power d minus 1 over 2. Okay. This type of singularities where the masses enter with opposite sign are these collapsed triangle singularities that come out of this a plus and a minus integral. Okay. Instead, the d contribution to this coefficient c, to the coefficient c that I mentioned before, is given by this, and this doesn't have any collapsed triangle singularity because you can interpret it as some CFT correlator where m's are momenta in some dimension, analytically continuous dimension. This term here instead is just the standard the function is just a CFT correlator in terms of the momenta, so in momentum space. And then once you know it's the D function, you can analytically continue to position space. So just to summarize what we have learned. How much time do I have? I think around 10 minutes, maybe still.
Yeah. So as long as if we ask some questions in the middle, so just so you can go until the.
Yeah, it's okay. I think I am totally in time for what I want to say. So the summary is the following. We have our celestial sphere. Let me just focus for simplicity to give some examples, which is like 3-point example. So I have two, for instance, plus operators, so incoming, and one outgoing, let's say. So this is a function of, I can write it as a function of minus Q3 because it lives in C minus. I can identify the two selectors here by sending Q to minus Q. And what we have learned is that this object is just a very well-defined integral, is a coefficient, which I just showed you, is this Bessel integral, this integral of three Bessel k in the radial directions, different that I just mentioned before, and then we call it plus plus minus, and of course depends on the dimension and the masses. Okay, so this is our coefficient that multiplies the standard anti-de Sitter three-point function. And of course, now with factorization, you can go on. You can do exactly, follow exactly the same step of the de Sitter case. And let me mention the case of the exchange. So here we, for instance, have two plus and two minus. Okay. So we just impose factorization and evaluate this diagram. So here we have O minus del 3 minus Q3, O minus 4, O minus Q4, then 1 plus Q1, O 2 plus Q2. So, and what happens is that this is now, it's not just a sum like in the sitter. In the sitter, for one particle of mass m, there are two operators, because those were the only operators that you could associate with the same mass. But here you have all the principal series, so that's the difference. But it's basically morally the same thing. So just instead of summing over Dirichlet and Neumann, you sum over all the infinitely many Dirichlet and Neumann operators, and then on plus and minus, and see delta 1, delta 2, delta plus, 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 minus, C delta, delta 3, delta 4, where these coefficients by factorization are exactly the same coefficient in some normalization. And then here you get the same function that you got in Euclidean anti-de Sitter space. So this is the generalization of the de Sitter result. In the de Sitter, there was just a sum over Neumann and Dirichlet. Okay, same type of coefficient here and same type of diagram here. And that's the generalization to the case of celestial holography that we have obtained using these methods. And of course, you can generalize to more general diagrams, like, for instance, loop diagrams and so on. At every this type of formulas can be written down for any perturbative diagram. Very good. So let me make some comments now, and then conclude. So the first comment is about the analytic structure of these coefficients. So these are coefficients which are these Bessel integrals. So it's very clear what their analyticity structure in the dimensions is. For instance, you can study both in examples or using the Mellin representation, this coefficient here as a function of the masses. And we are interested in the analytic structure in delta. Why? Because this is related to this integral and to, you know, the definition of a spectral representation. And what we see is that, again, like in the case of the sitter, these are meromorphic functions. Or delta. So in general, these are the meromorphic functions of this delta. And this implies that, like in the sitter, we can, at least perturbatively, it seems that it's possible to define some actual OPE. Okay, so you have a spectral representation and there are single poles, and then you pick the residue of this pole. The residue of this pole will not be on the principal series, will be like shifted, but at least at the perturbative level, the result of the sitter extends. And because of this, we can actually make use of the spectral representation also for the correlators that we, for the celestial correlators. So there will be some decomposition, like non-normalizable piece and spectral representation, so sum over spin in general and integral over dimension with some spectral function, the rho j or delta, and some partial wave, which depends on the points. Let me focus on 4 points, which is the most the simplest case. Okay, this type of formula follow. We actually worked out some in the paper about 4 points, but this follow, and we have some neuromorphicity perturbative of this spectral function at any order. And because we have that, we can also push this forward a little bit, a step beyond, and try to understand non-perturbative unitarity from this perspective. Okay. And so non-perturbative unitarity is nothing but the statement that from the perspective of the CFT, there is some decomposition of the identity that is that can be decomposed as the vacuum on this Euclidean CFT plus the integral of the principal series with some normalization. So basically Euclidean unitarity is telling us that these coefficients are positive on the principal series, and then you basically obtain that this spectral function has to be positive. So this is true also in the sitter, but and in the case, for in the simplest case where the operator are complex conjugate related. Of course, this is true when these operators are canonically normalized. There is a small subtlety in the context of this celestial holography that for each value of delta, we have in and out operators. So once you have canonically normalized operators, you can actually formulate a non-perturbative unitary condition of this type. Okay. So I will conclude, and I will conclude drawing another picture, which I like because it's kind of suggestive of the importance of connecting physics to Euclidean anti-de-Sitter space, which can be useful to understand these complicated functions that appear when we try to evaluate these integrals, at least, but maybe more deeply, this connection may be more deep. So we have, I want to draw on this top corner some diagram in anti-de-Sitter. Then let me see if I manage to do it in one page. Then here I will draw scattering on Minkowski. Here I will draw the sitter. And then this is kind of triangle. And at the center, the Euclidean anti-de-Sitter story, which via this analytic continuation can be connected to all of them, okay? So to summarize, we've discussed the power of anti-de-Sitter CFT methods beyond the context of anti-de-Sitter CFT. So we have been able to use these methods to compute for the first time, I mean, infinite class of these integrals. So that's the first thing, the first takeout message. And we have made manifest the analyticity property, so we have been able to study all these correlators at least at the perturbative level, okay, and something also at the non-perturbative level. So to conclude, I would say that the Euclidean anti-de-Sitter space seems to be kind of a nice place to put different backgrounds, which sometimes don't have the S-metrics, sometimes they do have the S-metrics, so Minkowski, de-Sitter, and de-Sitter seem very different from this perspective. But once we map them to Euclidean anti-de-Sitter, they look very similar. They just differ by these coefficient functions, the location, in particular, the location of the zeros of this function, which in Minkowski space depends also on the masses, encodes the physics of these different spaces. So here I think I can conclude, and I thank you very much for the attention.
So first, let's take a speaker. If there's anybody else who has questions, I'll let you guys go first because I had some selfish reasons, I guess, to want to invite Massimo. Okay, so if not, I guess I like that all of your, like, you don't run into some like funny business with like the 2D, say in the 40 case, so the 2D CFTs because you're always sticking to massive. So I know like Luca's challenged me at some points to be like, oh, celestial safety, is it just massless? It's like, it seems like it's actually nicer for massive. And maybe that's what you're partially showing with like the fact that you can have like these nice closed form expressions for your C, like
yes. COVID.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. So there is some, I mean, a closed form expression I didn't wrote here, but you should think of this coefficient as just a linear combination of these integrals. So this one and this one. So the coefficient here will just be a sine factor, some phase depending on the delta, but all the mass dependence is like this, is this type of integral, this Bessel and integral, at least I mean, at the level of you know, these contact terms, which this is one example.
Okay, so then maybe, I guess, maybe it's speculative or just like vague, but if you wanted to try to now stick to a gap theory, where I guess you lose a lot of the power of like the asymptotic symmetry side of celestial CFT, but
yes.
See anything where like the 2D CFT structure would help with some things that maybe are easier to prove in a gap theory? I don't know what,
So for me, I'm really, I don't want to make a big difference between gap and non-gap theory in the sense that, so the next step of this, of course, is to try to do some massless limit. And try, I mean, we already did, I mean, it's very easy to do like to match results that have already been obtained in the case of massless, in the massless case, for instance. And this integral becomes very simple in the massless case, okay? But for us, is really to try to understand the general structure of this of this correlator on this and even on this CFT. I mean, of this whatever, I wouldn't call it even a CFT, this celestial CFT maybe. So the massive case is the most generic case. Of course, you lose something, but then you want to put it back. So I would like, so the next step would be, for instance, to consider some exchange of graviton, some spin two, and see how to evaluate it in this way. I would still like to compute, for instance, some massive scalar with an exchange of graviton as a simplest toy model, for instance, of using this this technology, and try to see if it makes sense. What are the problems? Because usually, when you put gravity, there can be some issues because some of these operators, especially in the De Sitter case, is very clear. The sum over the two operators gives you a sum over the stress tensor and sum over another operator, which is non-unitary. So you have to learn how to deal with these two operators in the limit. So this is one way to try to understand some properties of this CFT when you include gravity, which is complicated. I mean, we haven't yet addressed this. So we are taking this the problem from this massive case, because I think it's the most general. I mean, we can really try to think of learning the properties of this operator. I mean, in ADS, the analogous case is the stress tensor exchange or with massive scalars. And we want to try to understand what property would this exchange imply on the correlator. So we fix one observable. And we think there are massive, I mean, there are QFT, massive scalar QFT in Minkowski. We try to couple it to gravity and see what is the consistency associated. So it is a different perspective with respect to the asymptotic symmetry. We don't put them from the beginning. So we don't focus on the massless case from the beginning in this sense. But we've tried to be more general in the evaluation of this integral and the structure of this OPE and this, you know, the properties of this putative CFT. I don't know if I understood your
question. Oh, no, it's more because like when you, if you try to take the massless limit of the external legs, you're going to find the correlators are very like distributional, but presumably like if you know how to take the limits.
Yeah. You can actually handle that. You can actually handle that very, very, very nicely with this, in this Mellin formalism. But when you do this limit, you precisely see how the distribution will appear.
So then actually, I guess one silly question. So like the whole, like the Antonov, like Brett Kalryu and Alex Antonov and Andy and others, when they were doing, like they went to 2-2 signature because they couldn't do a conformal block decomposition of like the massless external scatter is basically right. So if you just, if you take your answer, the massless limit, do you actually
If you take my, can you repeat the question? If you take the answer,
you take amplitude, maybe then take the limit that the masses are zero. And so you just look at like some four massless scalar correlator. Can you see the 2D conformal block decomposition of that guy from your like finite mass answer in a way that.
Yeah, I mean, once you've got this coefficient.
Yeah.
The conformal block decomposition is the Euclidean anti-de Sitter one. Yeah. So it just follows. Yeah. Just you have this seed round that gives you the factorization, so you know exactly how the spectral function is built.
Yeah.
So I would say that's maybe just a technical issue, right?
Sure, but it's a technical issue that actually like ended up getting people to change signatures for
no reason. Yeah. Issue, and we can see more like the simplicity of the result. It's just a very complicated function. I mean, this Bessel integral, these are the same as CFT correlators in momentum space. They are horrible functions of the momenta and on the masses. Yeah. So this is the thing. So that's why it was complicated to start with to do this calculation, because you have to deal with these horrible integrals, these horrible functions, which nonetheless have nice analytic structures. Mm.
But okay, so just as I guess from the celestial point, if you have your answer and you have like say four massive scalars and you can understand how the mass limit leads to like the distributional 2-2 scattering amplitude and still write it in terms of 2D blocks, like you should write that up, because like Taylor and everybody else is just like they do all these shadow transformations just to get around
So in the massless limit, it's complicated. There are some subtleties. It would be nice to work out some details of this massless.
Because there's just been too many. Like people will like smear the external states or like change signatures to avoid getting the answer that seems better by doing.
I understand what you're saying. I agree. I mean, what I would say is that I believe that this Mellin representation will allow you to take this limit and you can solve these issues. You may be able in principle to solve these issues. Yeah, cool. So it would be very interesting. Yeah, I haven't anything to say at the moment about that problem in particular.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
If there's no other questions, we'll thank the speaker again. And
good.